This is part four of the continuation of the FRAC lecture of November 13th. So we've seen the 100th year of Waldorf education starting a little early in the spring of 2019 with Waldorf's very tepid response to the regulations and finally law concerning vaccinations for children. And then we went further into the spring of 2020, and Waldorf's acquiescence, capitulation, compliance with the shutdown of live education for a period of time and the mandated use of distance learning, including screens, to which Waldorf schools had been widely and notoriously opposed for decades. So not a very exciting way to meet that year, especially when the only major media coverage of the 100th year was in the New York article, highly critical of the Waldorf school and its parents and its strange ways. We might say that this school year that passed, that ended last spring, was, for the United States anyway, definitely the end of the beginning, as Winston Churchill would have said, and as T.S. Eliot would have said, not with a bang, but with a whimper. Our very, very nondescript conclusion to 100 years of remarkable education. Okay, fast forward, we have the late spring, the summer of 2020, in this election year, which, as I said in the FRAC presentation, filled with confusion for sure, right up to election day and beyond. And then we have this tragic death of George Floyd, and a huge, long overdue uprising of those saying that Black Lives Matter. Now, this movement goes back 7 years, but it really came into its own in the spring and summer of 2020 with the catalytic death of George Floyd. And then, like many, many other institutions of learning, like many other cultural institutions, such as museums, not-for-profit foundations, and along with countless corporations, OSNA wrote a statement of inclusion and equity, which you can find at waldorfeducation.org, the official website for the Association of Waldorf Schools of North America. Let me read the first paragraph. Quote, "The Association of Waldorf Schools of North America recognizes the historic and ongoing impact of racism on our continent and the injustice and discrimination faced by Black, Indigenous, and people of color. We understand that inclusivity and equity is a journey of both moral and educational imperative. As such, we take seriously our responsibility to bear witness to what is happening in the world, to center the voices of color in racial justice work, to change the course of inequities, and to identify and break down structural racism in all forms where it exists, particularly in Waldorf education." Well, unquote. One can only say hallelujah to that. It's about time Waldorf schools awaken to just how white we are and how little we have really done over a century to help the cause of racial equality in our country. So a good beginning for the second 100 years. Now let me read the second paragraph, much shorter, just 2 sentences. Waldorf education espouses principles of respect for human dignity. Any narratives or indications made by Rudolf Steiner that are in contradiction to these principles are not the basis for Waldorf education, and we unequivocally denounce such statements. Let me read that second sentence again. Any narratives or indications made by Rudolf Steiner that are in contradiction to these principles are not the basis for Waldorf education, and we unequivocally denounce such statements. Denounce, that's a pretty strong verb. Now, I'm old enough that for me it immediately brought up images of the show trials in the Soviet Union under Stalin, where everybody was being denounced right and left. And then fast forward to the 1950s after Stalin's death, where Khrushchev leads a denunciation of Stalin and so on. Maybe if I were a little older, the Spanish Inquisition would have come to mind first. I don't know. Denounce is a very strong word. Okay, how can we go about this? Well, first of all, any narratives or indications made by Rudolf Steiner, which are racist, I mean, he wrote a whole lot of stuff. He gave thousands of lectures, wrote 50 books and so on. Where's the list? I want to know what I have to denounce. I mean, that may take OSNA's complete administrative staff and a few years' worth of budgets to do that research to make sure we get all those statements. Oh, but wait. We don't have to do that, because the Waldorf critics list, under the leadership many years back of Dan Dugan, has been spending 3 decades or more compiling just such a list. If you want to know pretty much everything that Steiner had to say that was racist, anti-Semitic, whatever, go to the Waldorf's critics list. So make it easy for yourself, OSNA. Ask the Waldorf critics list to help you. Work together with them. Maybe you know a few lecturers that got by them, though I doubt it. They have some incredible scholarship on their side. So there you go. Maybe OSNA and the Waldorf critics list could, and plans, people for public education, non-sectarian, maybe just the way Waldorf has taken on the Alliance of Public Education, so they could work together with the Waldorf critics list. That would be quite an interesting sort of working together with a common cause to show what a racist Rudolf Steiner was. Okay, and perhaps since there's been quite a movement towards writing new mystery dramas to build on Steiner's original 4 dramas, well, we already have The Portal of Initiation by Rudolf Steiner. Perhaps one of our aspiring playwrights could do The Portal of Denunciation. That might be a good start for raising the consciousness of everyone about what Steiner has said and what Steiner might do. Now, as it happens, sometime after this was written, Beverly Amico, on the leadership group of OSNA, was interviewed on a website and recorded. And she was asked about this step of, to some degree, seemingly separating Waldorf education from Rudolf Steiner. And Beverly was very frank about this. She said that we are not an institution that propagates heritage. We're not even a specific method of education. We exist to fulfill a mission, social renewal. That's really what we're about. And in fact, the Waldorf curriculum, the only thing important about it is that it's designed to foster interest. That's what's there. It may not really meet the children of today. It is not a prescription, not a curriculum, not a method, and a transformation must occur. The only really important thing is the power of love. That's what Waldorf education is all about. It's a spiritual inquiry, not a belief system. Okay, so this interview, by the way, is on the page that from whence you came to listen to these lectures. It's right below the links to these lectures. You can listen to the entire interview. So here we have something very clear. Waldorf education for the second 100 years is going to be separating itself little by little, or sometimes by quantum leaps, from Rudolf Steiner. Because think about this. Many of the so-called racist statements, or if not necessarily statements, at least racist attitudes, implications of superiority of one race over another, are to be found throughout the Waldorf curriculum. Think of the fairy tales with their golden-haired, blue-eyed princesses. Think of the stories of the Hebrew scriptures, where it's very clear there's one chosen race and a lot of other second and third caliber runner-ups. Fourth grade, Norse, Aryan mythology. Grade 5, we even have the name Aryans used in Persian mythology. It's all about the battles of one race against another and who wins, and so on, right up the grades. Even the lack of black crayons in the primary school crayon boxes, it's there. It's just there throughout the curriculum. We would essentially have to completely change and revamp the Waldorf curriculum, which according to Beverly is fine because we're not the curriculum. Okay. Well, if the curriculum is wrong and filled with untruths and racist statements, what is that curriculum based on? It's based on Steiner's picture of world evolution. In fact, he speaks quite a bit about root races when he's talking about Lemuria and Atlantis, very important, very formative stages of Earth evolution. He talks a whole lot about light and darkness when, for example, we move from the warmth darkness of Saturn to the brilliant light of sun evolution. And certainly as we go through the cultural epochs, which the Waldorf curriculum carries on in abundance, we come across some grave problems. Well, evolution, that's deeply connected with reincarnation and karma. And in fact, on more than one occasion, Steiner said that his mission was most importantly to bring a renewal of the understanding of reincarnation and karma to the Western world, to Christianize the understanding of reincarnation and karma. And he speaks there about how it is very likely that one goes through different races in terms of one's various incarnations on the earth. Is that assuming, is that hypothesizing that there is progress as one moves from one race to another? So one would, in a certain way, really have to get rid of Steiner's evolutionary picture, toss out books like Occult Science, for example, and also perhaps really downplay anything he said about reincarnation and karma. Yet he himself said that we will not be able to solve the social problems of our time. We will not be able to be a movement for social justice, be it threefolding, which was also founded in 1919 along with the Waldorf School, or anything else, unless we understand that social issues arise from previous lifetimes. And I spoke quite a bit about what happens then, where individuals incarnate out of their karmically determined rhythm, the complexities of this, and how important it is for us to understand that, to be able to celebrate a festival like Advent, or pretty much all of them, in the right way. Well, Beverly even says at one point that Steiner's comments, I'll say what she said, Rudolf Steiner made misguided assertions about race. Misguided? Who guided Rudolf Steiner? According to him, spiritual beings, the hierarchies, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, Uriel, and a host of others, all the way up to the highest hierarchies. And I think he was clear about his relationship with the Christ being as well. Those are his guides. They misguided him? Well, yeah, anyway, maybe it's time for a little bit of atheism to come into the Waldorf movement as well. Do you see what the implications of this can be? What an incredible severance, what a cleavage there is between Rudolf Steiner's life and work, Rudolf Steiner, the individuality, and what will go forward if OSNA has its way in Waldorf education. This is very, very powerful. And I would say that if the giving in to measles vaccinations and the giving in to distance learning were the end of the beginning of Waldorf education, then the statement that OSNA has made and the statements that Beverly has made as a follow-up are the beginning of the end of Waldorf education. And here, if we're denouncing Rudolf Steiner, the only recourse that I see, who's going to defend him? You know, I mean, I know OSNA's probably been lauded as its courageous and brave step forward, creative, resilient, whatever, you know. Yes, real courage to denounce somebody who died 100 years ago and who has no great-grandchildren or great-great-grandchildren, no heirs whatsoever to defend him. That's very courageous to do. He's not going to take them to court, as some others have done. So who's going to defend Rudolf Steiner? I think he made that quite clear in his lifetime, that it was extremely important that his teachings, anthroposophy, and all that transpires in the daughter movements, of which Waldorf is perhaps the most prominent, that this not be separated from the name, the man, Rudolf Steiner. He said that to Ida Wegman. He said that to Marie Steiner towards the end of his life. And here we are doing that. I see only one group who could possibly be defending Rudolf Steiner against these denunciations. And that, dear listeners, are many of you. I think anyone who's a member of the Anthroposophical Society, who joined in part because they heard that Rudolf Steiner united his karma with the society. So good or bad or, you know, messed up, whatever the society may run into here and there, it is nonetheless at one with the karma of Rudolf Steiner. He's being denounced, my dear friends, and I think somebody has to come to his defense. And I would say that this is very much the end of at least Waldorf independent school education. However, that's the bad news. There's good news. And what's the good news? The good news is multifaceted. Number one, it's what I brought up earlier in these talks, this continuation, parents. The parents are forming their own version of Waldorf education. It is a working together, as I said in the Frack lecture, of Michael and Gabrielle. It's not Gabrielic homeschooling. It's not Michaelic classroom schooling. It's a fusion of the two. And out of the marriage of these two archangels will be born a new impulse for education. Nothing's wrong with the fact that Waldorf education, as it's practiced in North America, is 100 years old. Steiner said after 72 years, institutions essentially lose their steam and have to be completely revitalized and maybe broken up and reformed. So we took a little longer. That's what's going to happen. The community school, which may be on the property of a biodynamic vineyard, which may be connected with an anthroposophical medical clinic, which may take any number of forms, but which will involve the working together of parents and teachers and will have, out of freedom, not out of service marks, out of freedom, an anthroposophical undercurrent, an anthroposophical overtone, a connection with anthroposophy, and the freedom to speak about karma and reincarnation and to try to understand the mysteries of religions and races and what this has meant through the course of evolution and what Steiner said about it moving into the future. It's not easy. It's not going to be comfortable like Osna's comfortable generic statements. It's going to be something that will take a great deal of work. The second bit of good news is that if the independent Waldorf schools were to fall apart tomorrow, and that may not be a far-fetched prophecy, but certainly it's happening right now. They're losing steam, they're losing students, they're closing their doors, and Osna won't have the money from dues to be able to go much further, which is something of a blessing as well. But you know what? The Waldorf schools, with the turn of the 21st century, became less and less the central representation of anthroposophy in North America. That has been increasingly assumed by biodynamic agriculture. That is where more and more people are going to be introduced to Waldorf education. Or rather, excuse me, to anthroposophy, but also indirectly Waldorf education. That in turn will be followed by the growth of anthroposophically extended medicine. And then it will be the medicine and the doctors and their patients who will be taking up anthroposophy in a new way. So it's not really a tragedy if the Waldorf schools, the independent Waldorf schools in their present shape, were to fall by the wayside. Anthroposophy will survive them, but they will not survive in any shape or form if they are severed from anthroposophy. Is there a chance that they could go back, that OSNA could change its ways and so on? Probably not, because this is just the third strike. You know, one sees already in the response to measles and the response to COVID-19 that the Waldorf schools are not repositories of Michaela courage anymore. They really gave that up years back by denigrating the class teacher in importance in the grade school, by bringing in too many specialists and specialist teachers, by taking up thousands of causes, be it bullying or cyber civics or the movable classroom or the green campus or whatever, you know, just losing their direction, losing their connection to the curriculum, to reincarnation and karma, to world evolution, and finally to Rudolf Steiner. It's almost an afterthought that they would be denouncing him. So anthroposophy will hopefully move on, and we may see very spectacular things arising from the charter schools, but there will not there certainly be the strong connection to anthroposophy that only an independent school can bring. So it's very much going to be the community school movement, the impulse to bring anthroposophy into Waldorf education in a renewed way. And with that, I will conclude this continuation, and I hope this helps us see how at this time of year, Michael, Gabriel working together are really giving us the strength, hopefully the courage, to be able to meet anthroposophy in a fresh and new way. Thank you.